Hello, and welcome to BJGP Interviews. I'm Nada Khan, and I'm one of the associate editors of the BJGP. Thanks for taking the time today to listen to this podcast. In today's episode, we're speaking to Dr. Joe Burgin, a GP and an honorary researcher based at the University of Bristol. We're here to talk about the paper she's recently published in the BJGP titled Mental Health Consultations During the Perimenopausal Age Range. Are GPs and patients on the same page? So, Joe, it's really nice to meet you, and thanks for joining me here to talk about this research. And I think that you might feel this in your practice. I know that I certainly do, but there seems to be a really huge increase in the number of women coming to see us with issues around the perimenopause. Now, this research that you've published focuses on mental health issues, but I wonder if you could just talk us through, what do we know already about mood changes that happen around the time of the perimenopause?
Yeah, so I think it's widely acknowledged, even in clinical practice, that there are mood changes kind of around this midlife, and that there could be this hormonal element, and even NICE guidelines for depression mention that, you know, perimenopause could play a part in depressive symptoms in this age group. But I suppose there's not a huge amount known about who is suffering with these mental health symptoms, how they're presenting, and how we're managing them in general practice. So I kind of wanted to have a look at what are the experiences, like the differences and experiences between women, but also between the way women present and then how we as GPs deal with it.
And this was a qualitative study aiming to look, just as you say, at the experiences of women in this perimenopausal age range, and also really interestingly, GPs about the care that they provide. So you had a perspective from both sides, really. And you spoke to both the women who weren't on HRT and GPs, and I really want to focus on the results here. And you start off by talking about how GPs and patients set the agenda for the consultation. So talk us through this. What did that mean for patients and doctors?
Yeah, I think this was really striking because when, you know, we're in training, we're always taught, you find out what the patient wants, make sure that you have this kind of patient-centered care and that it's everything that you move forward with is shared care. But actually what I got, which I was quite surprised about, was that women found that quite difficult when there was a huge amount of uncertainty around why they were experiencing the symptoms they were experiencing. And that perhaps they could do with a little more guidance or facilitation from the GPs that they were seeing when they were coming in with these symptoms. So it kind of, I would say, it moved from what we say is patient-centered care towards really a patient-led care. So we've only got, you know, 10, 15 minutes. The first thing I'm going to ask you, what do you want from me? What are you expecting from me? So ideas, concerns, expectations is great. But if you have no idea what's going on or why it's going on, and you don't know what options there are available, you've just got concern and there's nothing else to guide you. And so that really makes it very difficult for women who are going in, like, what do you want? And I think some women just said, they asked me and I didn't know. And then you get into this really tricky situation where the women who already know what they want can get what they want, but they have to know before they come in to see you. So it kind of makes it kind of increases this kind of lack of equity between care for women who are presenting with mood changes in that perimenopausal age range.
And I thought it was really interesting that you found that many of the GPs didn't routinely ask about perimenopausal symptoms in women with mental health issues. And what do you think was driving that from the GP perspective?
I think there are a number of different issues. So there was a lack of confidence with some GPs, for sure. So, you know, especially depending on when you went through your training. So if you went through your training and the only thing you learned were contraindications to HRT, and you were told that, you know, hot sweats are going to be the major feature, and that was your basic training on menopause and perimenopause, then it's going to be really tricky for you to guide someone else through that and to know what the appropriate questions to ask are. There's also this feeling that maybe there's, you know, this stigma around it that, you know, if I say that, then I'm saying it's all your hormones. And so there's a worry of offending people. There's also just a worry of like opening Pandora's box. If I'm going to start asking you about this, maybe you're going to tell me about 30 different other symptoms. And we only have time to deal with this one thing. And that's one of the big problems about perimenopause, is when you have multiple different symptoms that may or may not be related, you kind of need to work through it with the patient. And you can't do that in a give me one problem, one symptom consultation model, which is what we're working with at the moment.
And maybe reflecting that, the patients that you spoke to talked about their consultation experiences. And I'm really sorry to say that often these experiences were not completely positive, and some women felt embarrassed or not confident to really feel they were allowed to talk about their symptoms. So talk us through that and what that meant for the people that you spoke to.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, it starts even before they come into the GP surgery, right? So we're thinking about the context. So the societal context is that, you know, traditionally, but pre-Divina and even post-Divina for a lot of women, right? It's not something we talk about. It's not something that has traditionally been taught in schools. It was only added to the school curriculum a few years ago. And even then, that's a long period of time to retain the information about what might happen to you in your kind of midlife. And there are a lot of women who just don't talk about women's issues. So there's that kind of hesitancy around women's health and women's issues. But then you also have the almost shame and stigma around mental health as well. So it's this perfect intersection of difficulty and shame in terms of bringing up those questions. So it starts there. And then when women are coming in, they're trying to work out what is the one symptom that I can discuss with the GP. I think one woman said, I know I'm not allowed to talk about it, so I'll try not to take up too much time. This idea that you can only say one thing because otherwise you're going to get cut off. So if you go in and your main issue is mood symptoms, you're going to say, you're going to talk about that specifically, and you're going to be led down this very specific path, which we have, you know, as GPs. We're going to ask you about, you know, maybe appetite, sleep, social circumstances, you know, risk-taking behavior, all of these types of things. But it's not within our, you know, our mental health formula to ask about periods and hot flushes or anything like that. So women won't offer that information because of the context, and because maybe they don't even know that the two things would be related. So it's one thing, you know, there's a lack of awareness, there's a difficulty with stigma, and then there's just, you go in and you're not asked. So I think it's just one obstacle after the next.
And I suppose some women and GPs actually shared this sense of uncertainty around whether mental health issues were related to the perimenopause or not. And I guess that feeds into it as well, all these different barriers that women and GPs might face in working out what's at the bottom of all these different issues.
Yeah, uncertainty was a huge shared theme between both groups. So it's difficult when there's no test. And this is another thing that people keep asking about. You know, patients are frustrated that there isn't a test. Why can't I have a blood test to tell me, am I perimenopausal, am I not? And GPs in turn find it really difficult because we're used to having tests to tell us things, and having to make this kind of amorphous identification of a endocrine transition, it's really difficult to do, especially in such a short period of time. And so you're having to kind of navigate through multiple different symptoms, which are, fair to be fair, you know, quite vague sometimes and can overlap with multiple other symptoms. So uncertainty comes up massively for both groups, and it's compounded when you think about our diagnosis of perimenopause and menopause is based purely on bleeding. It's based on, has there been a change to your cycle? Are you missing periods? Are periods more frequent? Have periods stopped? Well, what about the huge number of women who have a Mirena or on you know, a contraceptive pill of some sort, they don't know what's happened to their periods. And so if that's our only way to diagnose, we're going to have to go based on all these other symptoms, which again, may or may not be, or may be an intersection of several different things. And it just becomes a much more complex consultation with uncertainty on both sides.
And we were chatting just before we started recording that you're also a BMS menopause specialist. And I wonder what your feeling is on GPs and women just trialing HRT if there is this uncertainty. As you say, it can happen in lots of different groups, especially with women who might not be having a period at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's with HRT, it's always going to be a risk benefit. So with everything, you are weighing up, how likely is this to be menopause? There are certain symptoms that will always be more indicative of menopause to me as a clinician. Okay, so there's a huge amount of unresearched symptoms and issues in perimenopause and menopause. But if you're, you know, for instance, sleep, if you wake up frequently in the night, if you are having hot flushes, if you're having vaginal dryness, and you've got some period changes, or if you're not having periods for any other reason, I go based on these other symptoms, and then you also have anxiety. Okay, well, let's think about that. Does that make it a bit more likely? Does, you know, what are your feelings about starting HRT for this? And is it something we could trial for, you know, 3 months, as long as it's low risk in other ways, you know, low risk of breast cancer and clots and things like that, depending on the type of HRT that we're using? And how acceptable to you is that to try that? And I think for a lot of women, if they come in knowing a lot about it already, their awareness has been raised, I think it makes it a little bit easier to have that conversation and then to make a decision as to whether, almost like a trial of treatment as a method to help with diagnosis. But it's also difficult because there's a placebo effect with everything as well. So we don't want to start all women on HRT and then, okay, a certain proportion of people will always feel better once they've been able to talk about their problem and feel like they're doing something towards it. So I think it's a really nuanced and complex issue, and something that requires more than probably one consultation, and it requires building up a bit of a relationship with the patient that you have.
And you did touch on this, and I think one of the interesting things raised by the GPs here was the lack of training about perimenopause. And this is probably reflective of my experience and lots of other GPs as well, where we learned really little about menopause and perimenopause during medical school or GP training, but we pick up a lot on the job and through extra training just because of the volume of patients we see every day with these different issues. What are your thoughts on how we can better support training for clinicians going forward?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think that I heard the term perimenopause in medical school at all. This was all kind of subsequent training, and you kind of fill in the gaps bits on GPVTS and things like that. In terms of support, I think that a lot of GPVTS are trying to plug those gaps. And I think that the trainees who are coming out now know a lot more than we were taught previously. But it is a matter of trying to reach everyone who's already gone through that process. And sometimes there's additional training that's needed, and all of that, you know, those webinars that are put in place by PCNs can be incredibly useful, so that it is more embedded into our daily knowledge. I think potentially having more, specialist is probably not the right word, but I put it more like, but having someone in your practice, and this was shown in the research as well, who knows a bit more about it that you can always go to if you've got a difficult case. I think that's incredibly useful. So at my practice, we have education afternoons once a month. And then, you know, every so often I will be invited to talk and I will discuss what's new in terms of guidelines or treatments available. And it kind of helps everybody to have someone who has a bit of a special interest in it. And I think with menopause, I mean, this isn't even, you know, high cholesterol affects a certain proportion of population, but this affects, you know, over 50% of the population inevitably at some point in their life. So this, there's never been a more general practice issue.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a really good summary of just some of the different things that, you know, different practices can use in terms of strategies to upskill or at least be, have a point of contact in the practice. And I know that that's certainly how we work in our practice. We've got a menopause specialist and we have these daily clinical meetings and people bring questions about that. And it's good to just bounce ideas off. Anything else you want to talk about from the results of this study? Any final thoughts about the paper?
I think when thinking about things that we could change, I've definitely thought about how could we do this within the constraints that we have in general practice already, because it's all very well for me to say we need, it's a complex consultation, we need more time and we need more continuity, and that would be great, but that's, we have very little control over that. So what can you do as an individual GP? And I think it would be, if you're seeing a woman in the perimenopausal age range, you could just ask, has there been a change to your periods? Even just asking that question just either can light up something in that patient's head that says, oh, I hadn't thought about menopause before, and maybe there are some other symptoms that I haven't really considered. Or it could be just the green light for someone to be able to say, actually, yeah, I have been worried about this, and I actually think this is all just due to my hormones, and but I didn't really want to say anything. So just asking the question opens the door, and hopefully it doesn't open the door to a kind of 30 to 40 minute consultation, but it can really help to eke out some of those other symptoms that will help to make the correct diagnosis so that you're going on the correct treatment pathway for that individual patient.
And I think it's especially important when we think about the stigma that might be attached, as you say, with mental health issues, and also in some communities not wanting to be able to talk about women's health issues or the menopause. So this takes me back to a podcast we did talking about pelvic floor health, and the sort of suggestion to GPs was just ask about pelvic floor issues, you know, a couple of months after someone's had a baby, just because it might open that door. They might not want to talk about it then, but they know that that door has been nudged open for a future conversation. So that's really great advice, actually.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to think about that, how we can contribute to a more equitable experience of menopause. So we know that women from more deprived backgrounds are less likely to get HRT. Is that because, you know, as some people would argue, women from wealthier backgrounds are having HRT and don't need it? I mean, it's always possible, but there's likely to be a huge amount of unmet need if you've got lots of women experiencing hot flushes, poor sleep, mood changes, who could benefit from a medication, which we know is relatively low risk, and they're not able to access it because awareness, access, not being asked, all of these issues. So we are widening the divide between women if we don't go in and be more proactive.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be speaking to Sarah Hillman and Claire Mann, who've published a paper about equitable menopause care from the women's perspective. So please do have a read of that paper and have a listen to that as well. I think that that's been really interesting, great information to pass back to sort of practicing GPs. But I just really wanted to say thanks, Jo, for your time here.
No problem.
And thank you all very much for your time here and for listening to this BJGP podcast. Jo's original research article can be found on bjgp.org, and the show notes and podcast audio can be found at bjgplife.com. And as I mentioned, we're going to have another podcast in a couple of weeks focusing on equitable menopause care. So do tune in for that one as well. Thanks again for your time today, and bye.